Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Hulu and Netflix gave birth to a new scripted series earlier today. We'll cover both attractions during our opening hour, starting with Hulu's take on the classic young detective mystery saga, The Hardy Boys. Executive producer, writer, and director Jason Stone joins me next. Selena, the series, is the Netflix newcomer. 2 years after the Tejano music superstar's biodrama series was announced, Christian Serratos plays Selena. Next half hour will be with executive producers Jaime Davila and Rico Martinez live from Los Angeles. What's in the cards for TV 2021? More smart TV distributed services, mega content ventures beyond Discovery and Paramount Plus, interactivity and next-gen TV on a grand TV scale. Well, we'll get a few early observations from Hub Entertainment research principal David Tice. He's back with us after the top of the next hour. Also ahead, The Griot turns to television, our classic trivia question, and David and I offer takeaways of the week. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker and TuneIn Radio, and presented on Amazon Music and the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. This just in, tomorrow will be televised, brought to you by Audible.com. The leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book or two when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. 51 degrees, the top of the hour here in the New York metro area. And as Bob Dylan or Pete Seeger might sing, we are ready for a hard rain that's going to fall between tonight and tomorrow afternoon. We're expecting like an inch or two of rain from the west, coming east. And we're delighted wherever you are that you are with us live for the program all about TV's current and future. Got a great 90 minutes in store for you, wonderful guests for you to hear from and to react to. So we invite you to get the reaction off the ground and be interactive with us. Pick up the phone and dial in with this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number's good anywhere you're catching us across the country or around the globe. Here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. And if you're shy about the phone, that is no problem with us. We've got a chat room for you. It's SimonApple04 by name, and you can find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And remember, whether you use the phone or not, we will get you going. And in the meantime, you can check in with others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk, Spreaker, or TuneIn screen. Follow the instructions of Bibly live with you. Jason Stone from the Hardy Boys is live with us, I believe, from up north in Canada after these news notes. Byron Allen's first media resolution of 2021, adapt online destination thegrio.com into a multi-platform, multi-genre television service. Allen Media Group will premiere thegrio.tv January 15th. That's Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday, taking over multicast channel Light TV, which Allen acquired earlier this fall from MGM Television. The service will play over broadcast stations, cable systems, and smart TV products, and feature a variety of content from scripted series to concerts, variety, and lifestyle shows. Specific original programs are expected to be detailed by Allen Media Group by the end of this month. TheGrio.com, which was bought by Allen from NBC Universal 4 years ago, has nearly 11 million active users per month. Oxygen will debut 4 new true crime series next month as part of a 9 Nights of Twisted Killers event. The new programs are Florida Man Murders, Framed by the Killer, On One Deadly Mistake, and Exhumed. Participating producers include Ice-T, that's Ice-T of Law & SVU fame, Blumhouse Television, and Kelly Ripa with husband Mark Consuelos. All Rise and First Wives Club's co-star Brian Michelle Babe will develop and or executive produce new series for MTV and other Viacom CBS services. Under a first look development arrangement. Bate will do this through her recently formed venture Down on Maple Productions and explore concerts or concepts featuring new talent and underrepresented communities. Now some quickies. No resolution on the blackout that started earlier this week of TegNet and Nexstar TV stations on DirecTV and Dish Network respectively. The Nexstar situation also has impacted Dish's carriage of WGN America. Popular podcast miniseries Nice White Parents is under development as an HBO half-hour series. Issa Rae and Adam McKay are involved as executive producers. Animal Planet will bring back Big Cat Tales for a second season, 2021. And former Brady Wedge co-star Marie McCormick is set to co-host Frozen in Time, one of the new attractions on Discovery+. The aim is to upgrade California homes, Southern California homes specifically, with more contemporary style. And that is news notes for today. Remember the Hardy Boys? Well, you should know them from book form because you or someone you know probably read them when you were young or even getting older, about those two boys in the same family who loved to solve mysteries like the Tower Treasure and others in book form. Then they became an attraction in serial form on the Mickey Mouse Club in the 1950s with the Mystery of the Applegate Treasure and the Mystery of Ghost Farm. Then, after a couple pilot possibilities, they really hit big in the 1980s with the Hardy Boys Nancy Drew Mystery Show featuring Parker Stevenson and Sean Cassidy, the brothers. And, of course, that was the show that Sean had his number one hit to do Ron Ron. And, in addition to that, the Hardy Boys, a couple of years ago, was produced by the Canadian studio Nelvana into a syndicated series, also teamed with Nancy Drew as a half-hour program. Well, as of today, the Hardy Boys are back in a new version, also produced by Novella with another production company. And joining us to talk about it live from Canada is the executive producer, writer, and director of the series. That's Jason Stone. Jason, welcome in.
Thank you so much. Good to be here.
Same here. And where are you calling from out in Canada?
I'm actually in Vancouver. I'm up here doing a new show.
All right, we'll talk about that in a little bit. First of all, what made you get involved in such a classic concept as the Hardy Boys?
Well, I actually read the books as a kid, and I actually did my first book report on the Tower Treasure when I was about 12 years old, which is the age that Joe is in our show. And I always remembered the stories, and I loved the material and the world that it offered and the chance to take on such an iconic piece of history and entertainment property was super exciting. And Lambert Productions, Joan Lambert, is the executive producer, and she runs the production company that partnered with Nelvana and Corus and Hulu to bring this all to life. We met early in 2018 and discussed the possibility of me working on it, and thankfully she brought me on, and here I am.
Mm-hmm. Did you have a chance to see the earlier TV versions of the Hardy Boys, what Walt Disney did, what Glenn Larson did with the ABC series with Parker Stevenson, Sean Cassidy, and the other series that Nirvana did some time back?
I think I got a chance to see the Parker Stevenson one, a couple episodes of it when I was a kid. I think I remember my dad watching it, but I didn't watch it religiously at all. I was more into the books, I think, than I was into the show at that time. I was pretty young. I was a kid of the 80s, so I didn't grow up with it.
So when you got the assignment to not only executive produce the program, but also write and direct episodes, what was the key for you in terms of this translation of the Hardy Boys?
Well, first and foremost, we wanted to capture the feel of the books and be faithful to what the books are all about, you know. There's been other adaptations of older properties, you know. I worked on a show called Riverdale, which is obviously based on the Archie comics. And, you know, for us, the core value of the show is really about, and the books is really about solving mysteries and searching for truth, but also the relationships of family and friendship and how important it is to find people you can trust and you know, be loyal and a good person as you go through the process of solving these mysteries. And, you know, at the core of it all is this relationship between Joe and Frank as brothers. And we wanted to make sure we found something really fun and honest and truthful, but also full of adventure. And, you know, that's what we were aiming to do when we re-envisioned it.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think the Hardy Boys has become a TV, in a way, a very iconic TV series? The fact it's been adapted so many times by so many people. What does it say about the attraction of the books and how adaptable they are for television to begin with?
That's a good question. I mean, I think at the heart of it is just everybody loves a good mystery, and those books, just like the Nancy Drew series, offered a lot of great mysteries, and it gave the kids that were solving those mysteries a lot of agency, so they were empowered to be at the forefront of solving those stories. And I think that just makes for really exciting storytelling, because you know, it's not often outside of, you know, five adaptations here that you get to see young people, or it didn't used to be that common to see young people have that much of an active role in mystery solving. And so I think mining those old stories, especially something as recognizable as the Hardy Boys or Nancy Drew, is really exciting for people today. And I think, you know, the networks and streamers have latched onto that, because it's just such a ripe world and a ripe venue for good stories, good characters, and fun adventures.
The new version of The Hardy Boys premiered earlier today on Hulu, available on smart TV sets and smart devices, and we are speaking with its executive producer, one of the key writers and directors of the program, Jason Stone. He's live with us from Vancouver, British Columbia, this half hour on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. So I'm having you live from New York. We're just getting started with this 90th edition of the Promo About Television, and we invite you to be involved with us. So give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. The popular Fox medical drama, The Resident, begins a new season next month. And Monday on Tomorrow Be Televised, we'll have their key executive producers live with us, Andrew Chapman and Peter Elkoff. That's Andrew Chapman and Peter Elkoff from The Resident, starting a new season next month on Fox. They're with us live with a preview Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. Our first guest, that's Monday on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. So how is this version done in a contemporary style? Give us a sense of the overall scheme of the show.
Well, it's sort of a balance between, you know, classic storytelling that we loved and were really inspired by that, you know, came out of the 1980s. You know, films like Stand By Me and Indiana Jones and The Goonies were really influential for myself and also a lot of the people that I worked with on the show, the crew and the cast. And it felt like the right sort of tone to take where, you know, even though it's all about these mysteries and this fun, we wanted to make it feel cinematic and big and feel like the world is a big place with a lot of hidden secrets to discover. So, you know, one of the things that we really chose to do really early on was to shoot in CinemaScope widescreen, which gives that sense of space around the character. So you always feel the world around them. And because this is a young cast, we wanted to feel like, you know, it's these younger people, but facing this much larger world where mysteries lurk in every shadow at every corner. So the lighting and the aesthetic is pretty moody and dark and mysterious, but also has moments of like, you know, poppiness and brightness. And so we try to keep that balance between the moodiness and the darkness with the fun and the light adventure side of it.
It sounds like, Jason, along the way, that you and production team also wanted to give an extra dimension to the Hardy Boys, that it's not just here they are solving a mystery and everything else about their lives is sort of pushed to the rear. It sounds like that you wanted to, in this version, bring out more of a multi-dimension to both boys so that we really get to know them not just as mystery solvers, but as you know, teenagers trying to deal with life as it is.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, you know, the most important thing to do with any story is to make sure you care about the characters. So we wanted to make sure that these kids and even the adults felt like people you know could relate to, could see yourself in. So it was really fun to build out the characters and let the cast sort of play and find versions and parts of themselves in the way they characterize and portray the characters that people know so well from the books. So yeah, we definitely wanted to find an authenticity there and an emotionality there that felt beyond the plot-driven mystery side of the storytelling. So yeah, I think that's a big part of it. Hopefully, audiences connect with that side as well as much as they do with the mystery solving.
Mm-hmm. Who plays the Hardy Boys? It's Frank and Joe. And how long did it take to find the actors you wanted?
Frank is played by Rowan Campbell. Joe is played by Alexander Elliott. And it's interesting. Alex is somebody we saw very early on and was pretty clear from the very get-go that he was going to be our Joe. He'd come from a theater background. He'd done a few roles on some shows, but as a supporting character, and had not kind of headlined a show like this. But he was such a talented kid and so smart and had so much range, and we knew he was a real find, and we were really excited about that. And he was there from the start and then sort of stayed there and was patient with us as we tried to fill in the rest of the cast. And Rowan is the total opposite end of that because we found him at the very end of the process. We were testing a few other actors who were terrific, and then I had gotten a tape from Rowan's manager pretty late in the process. We were already in pre-production. And we looked at the tape, and it had a couple of clips from scenes he'd done and a couple of audition tapes that he'd done for other shows, and I ended up meeting with him on Skype and having him read for the show, and he was terrific and had, you know, all of the old wise sensibility that Frank has to have, but also this youthful sense of adventure and fun. And he had, you know, he's equally talented as Alex, and the two of them together just lit up the screen, and we just knew we'd found our pair.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the mysteries, at least early on, that they get the chance to solve? Were many of them taken from the book series themselves, or did you do a mix of plots from the books, contemporized, and original mysteries?
Well, because the show is a serialized story, it's one main mystery that spans the entire season. So we did fictionalize. We did kind of take our own path for the main mystery of the show. But within each episode, there are smaller mysteries that kind of track the path in order to get to the bigger clues, which are very much lifted from the books and the way they discover things and the way they chase down clues and their suspects. And some of the puzzles they solve were inspired by the books. So, you know, it's a mixture, but definitely the overarching mystery was something that we had to, you know, come up with on our own because we wanted to span a larger story. And you know, the Hardy Boys books, each book, even though it's a you know, a couple hundred pages, the mysteries themselves are pretty self-contained. And we thought the better way would be to use those as inspirations for the episodic details and then take our own and spread it over the course of the season.
So what's the overriding mystery? How does it get triggered?
The trigger of the show is that they lose their mom in a mysterious accident that happens very early on in the pilot. I'm not supposed to run the spoilers, but you know, maybe your audience has already watched it, but it happens pretty early on. And their mom is investigating something relating to the town that she grew up in and that they've since moved away from. And the day she dies, they find out that she went back there to chase down a story because she's a journalist and she was investigating this story about a boat that sunk at sea. And that triggers the mystery that the boys end up searching for, because at first they want to find out answers about whether or not their mother died in an accident or if there's something else going on. And once they realize that it wasn't an accident, both the boys and Fenton, their father, set out to discover the truth about what happened.
Yeah. Speaking of Fenton, how is he as a character in this series? Because in previous iterations, whether it's the Walt Disney version or the Glenn Larson ABC version, sometimes Fenton is sort of a side character that like just comes in and out of the action, and sometimes he's very much involved in the mystery, as much involved, or at least trying to make sure that the boys are in the right direction. When they're trying to solve a case.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like that we were trying to be as faithful to that as possible. You know, one of the tricks of Fenton as a character is just he's a world-renowned detective in his own right. And when we pick up our show, our boys are not detectives, really. They're just, you know, two teenagers. So the trick was trying to find the right balance of having Fenton be a great father and a supportive person and be there as an inspiration to these kids, even though they sometimes go against what any parent would want them to do, because they do get pretty deep into some dangerous situations. But at the same time, we didn't want Fenton to take the lead on the mystery solving. We wanted to make sure this was a show about, for, and exploring the stories of the younger cast and our boys. So Fenton follows a different thread that takes him overseas early on in the show, and leaving the boys behind, thinking that the mystery is somewhere else. But as the boys quickly find out along with their friends, the mystery is much closer to home than they expected. And so ultimately Fenton will come back chasing his own thread as they all come together in the climax of the season.
You're hearing Jason Stone. He's executive producer, writer, and director of The Hardy Boys. It's Hulu's new series that premiered earlier today. You can find it, Hulu, of course, on most smart TV sets and smart TV devices. And Jason joins us live from Vancouver, one of the top production capitals of television in this North American continent. He's with us live from there this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Tom Avon with you live from New York, down south from where he is. If you have a question or comment or a mini minutes with Jason, don't be shy. Make a call to us, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Have another 90-minute episode of our show coming your way on Friday, and it's a good one. So 1 week from today, we've got the showrunner of Fox's new series, The Masked Dancer. Believe it or not, it's nearly 2 years since The Masked Singer premiered on that network, and we have the producer of that, by the way, one of his first interviews. Now we've got the showrunner, James Breen. He'll be with us live. Also, we'll check out the president of a company you might not know about, but it's very important in terms of getting African-American cinema to people. Its name is Doug Schwab. The company runs is called Maverick Entertainment, and they just launched a brand new smart TV network called Maverick Free Cinema. He will join us live as well. And finally, Facebook Watch recently premiered one of the most offbeat programs anywhere on television. It's called Rival Peak. Get this. It's an unscripted show where the people on the program are all artificially intelligence created. I'm not kidding. Artificial intelligence created. And the audience at home gets the chance to dictate how the characters operate in their various environments. We will have an exclusive interview with the showrunner of the program. He also co-founded the company that made the artificial intelligence. His name is Jacob Novak, and you will hear him next Friday, live and exclusive with us. We just since the interview. That's 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here a week from today on Tomorrow Be Televised. A great 90-minute episode for you. Do not miss it. Tell your friends about it, too. I'm really excited to hear about Rival Peak. It's on Facebook Watch, which, by the way, is available on many smart TV sets and smart devices, including Facebook's own smart TV product, Portal TV. Jason, what's it been like to realize your vision? Because you're doing it in three ways. You're executive producing, you're writing, you're directing. What's it been like for you personally to juggle all three roles and to bring the Hardy Boys back to TV life?
Well, I had a ton of help in all areas. I actually didn't write a lot of the show. I was a co-writer on episode 2, and I did some work on the end of the season. But we had a great writing team who was, working tirelessly as we went into production to get the scripts ready, and an unbelievable production team: our cinematographer, production designer, costume designer, set builders. I mean, it's a massive operation. But we were really lucky to have put together a group of people that were super excited about what we were doing. They loved the material. And really wanted to do something special and fun and interesting and something that hopefully people would connect to and hadn't seen before. So it was really satisfying. I mean, honestly, I felt like an incredible privilege to be able to work with such an iconic piece of material and be able to work with such a great group of people, both in front and behind the camera, to bring it to life.
Mm-hmm. By the way, the show is not only running on Hulu, it's also running on YTV, the popular cable network up in Canada. What kind of feedback have you had early on from both Hulu and from YTV viewers?
It doesn't air in Canada until March, so the YTV side of that, it will have to wait a little bit. But Hulu has been fantastic. They've been super supportive and, have really, put their back into getting the word out. And they put together the trailer that you might have seen that I thought was just fantastic and really captured the feel of the show and the books and the world we built. And, everybody, at YTV and Chorus and Elvana and Lambert and Hulu have all been super supportive and let us, take some swings that were pretty crazy at the beginning, but I think, came together to make a show that is really fun.
What was the wildest swing? Speaking of wild swings.
A wild swing, maybe shooting a sequence on the open seas for the opening of the pilot. That was pretty wild and something that was a little bit beyond the scope of our show when we first conceived it. But we thought it was a really important way to launch the mystery, and they were supportive of it. And I think the sequence turned out really well, and we had a great visual effects post production team that brought it all together and elevated it. And, I think that was one of the big ones, for sure.
So before you go, tell us about the new show that you're working on, and how soon will that be happening and where?
The new show is, I'm just doing an episode of it. It's not my show. It's a show called Motherland. It airs on Freeform, but that show is already up and running. It's the second season, so they don't need any help just yet. I'd rather just... pump up the Hardy Boys and make sure people know about it and go to see that. But Motherland's a great show as well, and I'm happy to be a part of it.
I believe it's Motherland Fort Salem is the full title of the program. And as you say, it's now
in season
2.
Now it's in season 2, yeah, and I'm directing episode 5 of the show, yeah.
Okay, well, while we look forward to that, have you thought about how a second season of the Hardy Boys would go? Would you stay with sort of the overarching mystery and then little mysteries here and there, episode by episode, or would you shift the format a little bit? Maybe two mysteries, let's say, over the course of a season?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we haven't gotten officially, a second season just yet. So hopefully, if all goes to plan, it would be great to get the privilege to do that. But we've definitely thought a lot about it. We've started writing it. And, we've got a lot of things cooking and some great stories that are being explored. It's a different mystery altogether. And there's definitely more of a of a feeling that there's mysteries being churned through in each episode that are leading towards several threads. Ultimately, it will still lead to a large mystery, but like the first season, it's going to be a serialized story with smaller mysteries along the way, but it will be a different mystery than the first season.
And the great news is that you've got all those books that you can use for wonderful source material, because they keep coming out with new Hardy Boy mysteries every year, from various writers. And of course, you've got the classic ones to work with, too. So plenty of material for hopefully many, many seasons to come. The program is The Hardy Boys. You can now find it on Hulu. Canadian viewers, watch for it next spring on YTV, the popular network up there. But right now, it's available all over the place on Hulu through your smart TV set or smart TV device, launched earlier today. And for more details about that service, as well as The Hardy Boys itself, go to www.hulu.com. That's www.hulu.com. The Hardy Boys, now playing on Hulu. Jason Stone, executive producer, writer, director, thank you again for joining us. Congratulations to you and your crew and your cast for making it happen.
Thank you so much.
And hopefully this season is the first of many more to come.
Thank you so much. Thanks so much for having me.
You're very welcome, Jason. All the greatest. Have a wonderful weekend.
You as well. Bye now.
Jason Stone from The Hardy Boys, joining us live from Vancouver, British Columbia, this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. And like I said, we're just rolling with our 90-day edition, first one of December, 2020. Happy year along for the ride on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn Radio, also available on Amazon Music, also on the iRadio Podcast Network, and on MediaVillage.com, the media leadership website. More Tomorrow Be Televised coming your way, but first some words from the fine folks at our sponsor, Audible.com. Did you hear about the fact that Dune, the new movie from Warner Brothers, is going to be arriving on HBO Max, the same time it appears in theaters next year as part of that whole big announcement yesterday? Well, if you don't want to wait until Dune shows up on your TV set through HBO Max or in theaters through Warner Brothers, well, here's what you do. Check out the audiobook version of Dune, the classic novel by Frank Herbert, one of the great science fiction novels of all time. Sure, it can be a fantastic movie as well. But if you want to check it out now, you can do so by having a trial run with Audible.com and have Dune be your choice of book to hear and enjoy. You know, Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital entertainment, information, and inspiration. There's now over 200,000 titles to choose from, including a growing catalog of Audible originals. By that, I mean original audio productions, best of Broadway, off-Broadway, and regional theater, and great one-woman and one-man performances. And remember, you can listen to any of these audio programs on any device, including whatever you're hearing us on right now at Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn Radio, Amazon Music, iHeartRadio, et cetera, et cetera. Just sign up at audibletrial.com/televised. It's audibletrial.com/televised. You get one free audiobook, 1 month trial of the service, also additional health and wellness material, very important this time of year, and great customer service from Audible's parent, Amazon.com. And get this, if you're already an Amazon Prime member, you can get two audiobooks for your trial run. That's right, two audiobooks for your trial run, and one of them can be an Audible original. So how about checking out audibletrial.com before this weekend, and maybe, just maybe, use it to have a holiday gift for yourself or someone you love, because there's nothing like discovering how audible.com can transform the way you hear the world. So for that free audiobook or two, it's audibletrial.com/televised. We're happy to have you with us on our first December 2020 episode of Tomorrow Be Televised, the promo about TV's current and future. And coming up our next half hour, we're going live to Los Angeles, where we're going to hear about the other major new series, scripted-wise, that premiered earlier today from Netflix. It's been 2 years in the making, Selena, the series. Joining us shortly, executive producers Jaime Davila and Rico Martinez, plus our classic trivia question of the week. It's all coming up after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You listen to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio, tunein.com. Remember, TuneIn Radio, well, all three, we should say, first of all, serve over 50 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Remember, TuneIn Radio is your home for the Coronavirus News Channel. Get the latest on this pandemic, now more than ever, from all over the globe, podcasts, other original material as well. The Coronavirus News Channel, your way 24/7. At TuneIn Radio at TuneIn.com. Welcome back to the second half hour of Tomorrow Be Televised, 90 edition coming your way from here in New Weber, York, where it's 51 degrees at the top of the hour. Simon Applebaum with you. Happy you're joining us. More great guests coming your way in the hour ahead if you just joined us. So be part of the program. Get interactive and get on the phone, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. It was about 2 years ago that Netflix announced that they were going to do a television series based on one of the great stars of music of our generation, Selena, the Tejano music star whose life was brutally cut short, unfortunately. But luckily, we had the chance to see her music presented on film in a wonderful performance by Jennifer Lopez. Well, now, 2 years later after that announcement, Selena the series has finally arrived with a wonderful new performer named Kristen Serranos in the title role. Joining us live from Los Angeles in an internet radio exclusive, executive producers Jaime Davila and Rico Martinez. Hola, Jaime and Rico. Welcome in and congratulations.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
You are very, very welcome. Jaime, we'll start with you. What kind of reaction are you getting so far from the Netflix viewers and critics about your series?
Oh, it's been such a great reaction. I mean, even Ted Sarandos today posted on Instagram saying he's so proud of this beautiful production. And we couldn't be prouder. It's great to see fans reacting and laughing at the same scenes we laugh at. It's really been such a positive reaction. We're so excited.
Mm-hmm. Rico, from the moment this was announced 2 years ago, obviously there was a lot of speculation about how you were going to do this, given, of course, what Jennifer Lopez did with the film version. Jennifer and Edward James Olmos had great cast from that movie. What kind of pressure did you and your team have to pull this off?
Yeah, it's a lot of pressure. Obviously, the movie is such a classic and it's so beloved. So there was definitely a lot of pressure to kind of live up to, not only live up to it, but also, you know, prove that we had something more to say or something different to say that the movie hadn't already said. You know, we set out to make a story about the family. Selena's story really can't be told without the family. And it was definitely a long road and really a lot of work to get it right and to make sure it was authentic and really accurate to the family's story. But with the help of a great writing team and a great cast and just a great production team in general, we feel like we've got there. And just recently, the family has talked about how much they love the series and how much they think it really reflects their true story. So that was a big compliment for Jaime and I, more than anything a critic can say, but just knowing that the family felt that the story was accurate to their struggles and everything they went through.
Yeah. Jaime, given the fact that you have a series to work with as opposed to a two-and-a-half-hour movie, what was that something more to say that you felt both of you and the family and everyone involved wanted to say about Selena, the career she had, but more importantly, the life she led?
Well, I just think there was so much that was left unexplored, and it honestly hasn't been explored on screen ever. You know, I think you can look at just her family members writ large, her brother A.B., the star producer and star songwriter who wrote so many of her classic hits. I think so many people weren't aware of his journey, of what it took for him to come up with these songs, but then also deal with the pressures of having a young family himself while he's going on the road, traveling with his family, trying to make this dream a reality. So I think that's just one example of, I think there's so much more that we can say when we talk about the Selena story. There's so many more people involved. And I think that was really what was exciting for us, which was, how do we tell the story of this legend? Like, how do you make a legend? How do you tell the story about someone who changed the world? You know, and what was so amazing to us when we got to interact with the family and just do so much research was, wow, the answer was hard work, grit, and I just think that so much of what this TV show does is hopefully highlight that, highlight all that work that it was, that it wasn't an overnight success story, that it was years and years of work, that, you know, Selena tried often to sing in English but was rebuffed by her label. I mean, there's just so many – the fact that her first band was not Selena y Los Dinos, the fact that they were called Southern Pearl. I just think that there's so much more that we have explored in the series that I'm so excited about for fans to see. But more than anything, I'm also excited for new fans of Selena. You know, what's so exciting about being on Netflix is you premiere in 190 countries on the very same day. And I just think what's so exciting about, you know, for people in Egypt or Japan or Denmark, maybe they haven't seen the movie. So this will be their first interaction with the Selena story. And so we're really proud of the family story that we told in part one, and writ large, the entire story that we're telling for the whole series throughout the 18 episodes, which is the story of this young girl and how she was able to eventually transform the world.
Before we get into how you found Christian Serratos and what you brought to Selena and the character, talk about how much assistance did Selena's family, her entourage, people who wrote songs for her, people who worked at recordings, how much assistance did they give in preparing the series?
Rico, do you want to?
Yeah, Rico, why don't you go ahead?
So, sorry. So the family was involved from the very, very beginning. And so, you know, they basically were kind of like so important to really getting the authenticity of this. Obviously, we did our own research as well, but to get literally their stories and interview them and hear, you know, all the details of everything they went through, there's no way we could have told the story without that. There's only things that the family knows that isn't written anywhere in any books or anywhere really. So we definitely relied on them a lot. They saw every script. They went over every script. They went through every revision. You know, their voice is definitely in this show.
Mm-hmm. Selena the Series, it's Netflix's newest scripted attraction. It premiered earlier today on smart TV sets and smart devices, and in some cases on cable systems around the country and around the world. And we are talking with two of the key executive producers behind the series, Jaime Dávila and Rico Martinez. They join us live from Los Angeles this half hour, exclusively on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Simon, I've been with you live from the other side of the US of A, New York, where it is now 51 degrees at the top of the hour. And we want to hear from you. Give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Don't forget, coming up Monday on Tomorrow Be Televised, our lead guest will be from the Fox medical drama The Resident, starting its latest season next month. Executive producers Andrew Chapman and Peter Elkoff. It's Andrew Chapman and Peter Elkoff from The Resident on Fox. They are with us Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. And next Monday on Tomorrow Will Be Televised, December 14th, among our guests, we'll have the executive producer of the perennial ABC series, The Great Christmas Light Fight. That's The Great Christmas Light Fight, Brady Connell. That's The Great Christmas Light Fight, executive producer Brady Connell. He'll be with us, or she'll be with us, depending on who it is, a week from Monday, right here, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Christian Serratos. I understand she came out of The Walking Dead. She was in at least one of the Twilight movies. How did both of you find her, and what had everyone say, that's the person we want to have be Selena?
Well, yeah, I would say we were so honored to work with Carla Houle. You know, Carla Houle is one of the best casting directors in all of Hollywood, but she also has this amazing experience with the specific talent we were looking for, right, which was Mexican, you know, Latina, to be this role. It was tough. I mean, Rico and I could tell you. I mean, we searched everywhere. I mean, honestly, I really don't think there was a rock we didn't turn. We looked at schools. We looked everywhere. It was a really big task, and we didn't take it lightly. And I think, you know, honestly, we looked at Rico, how many did we ultimately look at? I mean, there were so many.
I mean, I would say definitely in the hundreds, if not thousands, if you include all the different schools. So across the country from acting schools, any kind of creative school, basically, drama schools. So we were considering people that could be like potentially an unknown, but then we also scoured all working actors and actresses in Hollywood that that could make sense for the role. And, you know, like Jaime said, Carla is definitely an expert when it comes to Latinx casting. She's did Coco. She's done tons of really big Latinx themed shows. So we really, really searched high and low, and to find somebody who could meet all those qualities was really difficult. But ultimately what we wanted was really the best actor, period. And we think that is, you know, Christian. And when you watch her, I think you'll see, of course, no one, even the family says, no one will ever live up to looking exactly like Selena, because, you know, she was very special and there's no one like her. But at the end of the day, what you want is somebody who can really capture her spirit and deliver that performance to give you that feeling of Selena. And we think that in that regard, Christian was really the only person who could do it.
And I think it was such a fun moment.
What,
it was such a fun
kind of
moment
pre-work
when
did she do to capture the character?
Oh, my
God. I
think
the question would be, what didn't she do?
Yeah.
Right? I think that's the question. It's like, honestly, she worked so, so hard. She worked in choreography. She worked on – she watched so many Selena videos to try to, you know, get a sense of how she spoke, how she carried herself. You know, we gave her a dialect coach. We gave her a choreographer. She worked on her, I mean, everything. I'm trying to think what she didn't do to prepare for this role. You know, she really took it head on. And I think, honestly, it was so refreshing because, you know, just give you a quick anecdote. You know, when we were looking at all these casting tapes, you know, Rico and I independently were watching the tapes, and both of us saw Christian's tape and we're like, wait, is this, she smiled on her original tape. I still remember the smile she gave on that tape. And, you know, Rico and I just sort of said, like, there it is. And what was great when you have someone who has that talent, that's amazing. But then when you see how much work they put into it, which she really, really did, it was also inspiring. It was really cool. She really knocked it out of the park.
Yeah. Jaime and Rico, when you produced these episodes, were you able to film close or near where Selena lived, where she grew up, how she got her music career going, and so forth?
We
shot
the series
Go ahead, Rico. Oh, no, you go ahead, Jaime.
No, I was going to say, like, we shot the series in Baja California in the famous studios where X-Men shot, where Titanic shot. And I'll be honest, that was one of the most fun things for me personally was, you know, we'd walk the set and you would just point to a fish, you know, point to a tank and be like, oh, that's where Leo died. That's fun. So we had this amazing community that we worked with. And so it was an incredible place to shoot. You know, I often tell people, you know, so many Hollywood productions go shoot in Canada, but, you know, 3 hours away, there's amazing facilities, amazing crew in Mexico. And it was really exciting to shoot there. And I think Rico and I would love to shoot there again.
Rico, was there any time when things got, I'll use this term in a loose way, spooky, that, you know, you were, as you were filming this and watching Christian echo the role, that, wow, that is Selena. Wow, that is what she would be like. Wow, that is the way she would be with people, with her family.
Yeah, I think that there are times when all of us on set would get the chills, and it was usually during a performance. And two in particular stand out to me. One was from the first episode when she was performing her classic song, Como la Flor, and then the other one, which is yet to be seen, is when we shot something that was replicating a scene from the Houston Astrodome, and there was a point where all the crew, we were all just sort of looking at each other like, wow, she has really become her, I think that was really the moment when she was actually performing and with the band. That's the other thing. All the actors in the band had to learn the instruments. They were actually playing along to the track, even though we used the original Selena songs. Even Christian worked on singing, because there are some instances where she does sing. And so she had to really work with a coach and study, but all the actors from the actor playing her Selena's sister Suzette had to learn how to play drums from scratch. And AB had to learn the bass, and all the other characters who were playing Ricky and Joe and Roger Garcia and all these, and Chris, they all had to learn how to play. Some of them were cast also not only because of their acting abilities, but they had, because they had some musicianship. But that in itself was a huge ordeal. It's like constant every day, on top of the fact when they weren't learning their lines, they were studying the music, because there's so much music in the show. You can't, it's obvious if you know what you're playing. We can't shoot these performances if it looks like you don't know what you're doing. So that was another major task. And Christian, again, being in almost every scene, had to learn not only all of her lines, which were a lot, but she also had to learn all the choreography, all the lyrics and everything. So it was definitely like a huge boot camp that was happening while we were shooting.
Because, I mean, this was one of the most musical families, let's say, that has been around in recent decades. And one thing, by the way, I wanted to find out more about is about how you cast the other characters, especially Selena's father. Because when I remember the movie, I not only remember Jennifer Lopez's performance, but I remember Edward James Olmos as the father. And I've seen this. He's one of my favorite actors. I loved him in Miami Vice. I loved him in Stand Deliver. Great performance, by the way. Turner Classic Movies showed that great film a number of months ago. Remember Battlestar Galactica? He's one of the Zoot Suit. I think one of the most versatile actors among Latinos or any people, anybody, anywhere. But I think he really had an underrated performance as her father. That performance was, I think, just amazing.
I totally agree, and I have to say that Ricardo was another great example of, I think, when we saw him and saw how talented he was at acting, he's an amazing actor. You know, Ricardo has so much talent. Ricardo Tavira, not just in Hollywood, you know, where he's been in Desperate Housewives and Scandal, but, you know, in the theater world. He's such an amazing, incredible actor who spent time in London performing, and also just an amazing guy. So, you know, when we saw his audition, it was amazing, right? You could sort of really get that he maybe had a different understanding of the character, and he had a deeper understanding, and Rico and I sort of investigated why, and it turned out Ricardo's from San Antonio. He knows these characters, you know, the Quintanilla family, and he was actually born the same year that Selena was born. So, you know, these characters are his family. So I think what Ricardo brought to it, which was so unique and different because he is from that area, was a very specific understanding of how emotion is shown, not shown, when it's shown. And I just thought he also did such an amazing job. And to your point, I think what's so exciting about the series, you know, it's not just, you know, the main character, Christian, that's great. It's Ricardo Chavira, the dad, who's amazing. It's Sadie Lopez, who plays Marcela, the mom, who's just incredible. Gabriel Chavira plays AD, the brother. Noemi Gonzalez plays the sister, Suzette. And they're all so amazing. And you immediately just fall in love with this family. And I thought what the cast did really well was not just to play a family, but in a way also become a family. I think that was really exciting for us on this show was, you know, it sounds cheesy, but we really did. It was like we were doing a family show and we became a family. It was really lovely.
We're speaking with Jaime Davila and Rico Martinez. They're the key executive producers of Selena the Series, the new critically acclaimed scripted program from Netflix that premiered earlier today to great acclaim, especially for the lead performance of Christian Serratos. We have Jaime and Rico on for a little bit longer. We're going to find out their production company and what other projects they are working on in the world of the tube. So stay tuned for that. Also, our classic trivia question coming up. And if you have questions, by the way, for Jaime and for Rico, give us a call, 646-652-2906. And again, our classic trivia question is coming up near the top of the hour. Once again, coming up a week from today on our program, we will have from Fox's new spinoff of The Masked Singer, The Masked Dancer showrunner, James Breen. From Maverick Entertainment and their brand new network, Maverick Free Black Cinema, the president of Maverick Entertainment, Jug Schwab, will be with an interview exclusive. And finally, from the new Facebook Watch series, and it is a stunner because all the characters are artificial intelligence created. It's called Rival Peak. We will have the showrunner of that program, Jacob Navak. That's all coming up a week from today, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Jaime and Rico, both of you are involved in a production company called Campanaris Entertainment, which put this series together. How long has this been in business for, and what other TV projects are you working on?
Yeah, so I started the company. This is Jaime. I started the company Campanario about 6 years ago, and Rico joined about 4 years ago and really transformed the company. I would say when Rico joined Caponario, it really accelerated, and it's been incredible. So we not only just have Selena the series on Netflix, we have another series on Amazon Prime, which is called How to Survive Being Single, or Cómo Sobrevivir Soltero. And it's a amazing comedy about a group of Mexican friends that are just living their lives in Mexico City, trying to figure out how to date in this new world. And it's amazing, amazing comedy. It's something that you don't often see in the Spanish language world. We're really excited about that. And I think in general, that's what really differentiates our company. You know, we often say that Caponario speaks English, Spanish, and Hollywood. And I think in general, we create content for everything. We create content in English. We create content in Spanish. And, you know, Rico and I also have some other great stuff in development, something that's getting announced next week that I wish we could talk about now. But, you know, another exciting project we have in development with one of our Selena writers, Aaron Serna, at ABC. It's an amazing comedy sort of set in Texas that explores some more of this Tex-Mex culture via, you know, a comedic sitcom. Rico, did I miss any other things that we have cooking?
Rico, where are you?
We lost Rico.
I'm here.
There he is.
Sorry. So we have another project that I think it was the one you were saying you didn't want to mention because it's going to be in the press next week. But we have tons of other shows in development, and really what we're really trying to do is tell stories about Latinx people with Latinx people in a more kind of mainstream way that we haven't yet seen before. That's sort of alongside all the other types of programming that you see that everybody is watching. That's our goal. We want to create the kind of shows that everybody would want to watch. That just so happens to be that there happens to be either a Latinx theme, Latinx people, or Latino creators like ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Rico, do you and Heidi think that that we are about to see a long anticipated explosion of content, both scripted and unscripted, that deals with the Latinx experience? Because I know that there's been a lot of developments over the course of the last few months. We are seeing more services on smart TV sets and smart devices that are aimed at people of color, being put together by independent players, many of whom are women. Some cases, organizations or people of color, some that are already on, some that are going to be on, both English and Spanish language. And Nielsen came out yesterday, I don't know if you saw it, with their first ever TV inclusive study that says that while there's been progress made, there still is this issue of why can't we get more series that are produced by Latinos, feature Latinos on and off screen, that hang around past one season.
Yeah, I think, you know, Jaime and I tend to be pragmatic but always hopeful. There's a lot of people who feel, obviously, that there isn't enough content right now that reflects, you know, Latinos or people of color in general, and they're right. But we have a lot of hope that in the next few years it's going to change a lot. And it's because I think – you know, we're at a point in our culture now where people are so much more sophisticated, and the younger generations are extremely diverse, and they're going to expect to see shows that, you know, not only reflect them, but are about them. And so we think it's just a matter of time, and it's already starting. And, you know, with how long it takes to develop shows and sell shows, obviously, there's a little bit of a lag time, but we ourselves have a ton of stuff that's either in development, about to be made, and this is just, you know, one company. So we do think there's change on the horizon, and obviously, everyone, including ourselves, would like it to be faster. But that part of our mission statement and why we're doing what we do is to help speed that process along.
Mm-hmm. For either one of you, before we leave, if Netflix gives you the go-ahead to tell the whole story of Selena all the way, how many of her seasons you need to do, how would this run? How many seasons do you see Selena the series going? How do you see it evolving? Let's say both of you.
Well, look, I'll just say we went into this knowing that it's, you know, it's a closed-ended story, unfortunately, because, you know, obviously the tragedy that happened that befell Selena. So we went in and really wanted to tell a closed-ended series. So we have two parts on the show. I definitely think that, you know, the more we think about it, there's so many more stories you could tell with these characters and with these actors. But I think what I would say to fans of Selena series, you know, don't be upset that there's only 18 episodes, because I think what we're saying is hopefully what you see from the show is so much talent, so much amazing actors that you maybe didn't know about, that we're excited to produce more shows with them, with Netflix, with other places, that showcase their talents in different roles, in different genres. And I think that's really what we're all about, right? I'll let Rico sort of answer the question as well.
Yeah, I think obviously it has there's a limit to what we can tell in this story, but there's a second season coming, and in the second season, I think fans will be pleased to see Selena's journey continue. Season one is more focused on, you know, everything from her birth to her sort of teenage years and starting to become a woman. And in season two, it's really about her becoming a woman and becoming this, you know, independent person. So I think that whole part of the story is something that people are really going to look forward to, because I think a lot of it is the stories of Selena that people sort of are more familiar with, and the Selena more people know in terms of just, you know, the hits and what she looks like and all that. But obviously with a story like this, there is a limit to how many seasons, and we thought two made the most sense.
And right now you can see stage one of Selena the series on Netflix through your smart TV set, smart TV device, or in some areas through your local cable system. Do check it out. And if you want more details about the series and the service, here's where you go, www.netflix.com. That's the online site for Netflix, www.netflix.com. Selena the series, stage one, now available on your smart TV set, smart TV device, or depending on your area, through Netflix, your local cable system. Jaime David Rico Martinez, thank you both for joining us. Congratulations on making the journey 2 years ago to have this happen, and for what's happened so far in your first day on the air. Hopefully more great stuff to come, not only from this series, but from other projects with your production company. We will keep an eye out for the ABC announcement. When we hear about that, we'll use it as an update in our up segment, and we'd love to have you back anytime with more projects to talk about.
Thank you so much, Simon. This was so much fun. Appreciate it.
It's been a pleasure all the way. Jaime Enrico, take care. Buenas noches, and have a super weekend. Fin de semana.
Buen fin.
Adios.
Gracias. Adios.
Muchas gracias. Adios. Jaime Enrico, Rico Martinez, joining us live from Los Angeles. Now time for our classic trivia question of the week. We posted for the first time on Monday. Let's do it again. And if you're first with the correct answer, you'll win the DVD of the popular movie Crazy Stupid Love, starring Steve Carell, Ryan Gosling, Julianne Moore, Emma Stone, and a cast of thousands. And also, the very unusual Telaria Clutch Plus device that allows you to clip your cards, clip your money, other things, very nice and neatly. Here's the question. How many scripted TV series did Lloyd Bridges star in? How many scripted TV series did Lloyd Bridges star in, beginning with his classic adventure series from the 50s and early 60s, Sea Hunt? One more time, the question, how many scripted TV series did Lloyd Bridges star in? We're not including miniseries that he was a co-star. We're not including unscripted. We just want the number of scripted series that he was involved with, Sea Hunt being the first. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. And if you first get the correct answer, you'll win the DVD of Crazy Stupid Love and the Clutch Plus clip device from Telaria. And if you missed the question a moment ago, we'll try to present it one more time before we leave you about a half hour from now. If not, we'll post it tomorrow morning. If we don't have a winner by then, post it tomorrow morning on Facebook. Simon Applebaum is where you go. Or at our Twitter site. That's at UBC Simon TWBT. That's at UBC Simon TWBT. Let's see if we can go for a winner today or before the weekend is out. And let's see if we can do it, okay? But remember, in order to win, you got to play in. If you've won before, let somebody else do it and have their moment in the winner's circle. So once again, get involved, play in for the win, and all the very best. When we come back, TV 2021, how is it going to look? Or different from TV 2020? We'll find out when one of our favorite guests, David Tice from Hubbard Entertainment Research and the author of the popular book, The Genius Box, will join us live from Virginia as we pause at the top of the hour for web identification. www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, tunein.com, your home for terrific internet radio 24/7. And remember, all of them serve together over 50 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Don't forget, coming up tomorrow, it's the Black College National Top 10 Countdown. Coming your way tomorrow at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific. The Black College National Top 10 Countdown. Catch it on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker tomorrow, 8 p.m. Eastern. That's 5 p.m. Pacific. Only on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker.com. Remember, Best BTR also available 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the final half hour of this 90-minute edition of Tomorrow Be Televised, kicking in December 2020. And welcome to those of you just joining at the top of the hour. Simon, I'll move you live from New York. Good to have you with us. One more guest coming your way in the half hour ahead. And we invite you to pick up the phone and dial in and be interactive with us. 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. Numbers in any way you're catching us across the country around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn Radio. You can also check in our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it at the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And don't forget, you can still connect others with us and you by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk Speaker, TuneIn screen. Follow the instructions of other people to be live with you. Our final guest today has been with us before. He is a marvelous person who follows TV trends. He is the author of an excellent book called The Genius Box. He came out with it a couple of years ago, now in paperback through Amazon.com. And he's also the principal of one of the top research firms covering TV, Hub Entertainment Research. Great to have with us back from Virginia, David Tice. Hi, David.
Hi, Simon. Thanks for having me back again.
It is a pleasure. Let's get right to it. I know we still have a month to go, and goodness knows, given the kind of news we've had the last couple of weeks, there's still some news to be had. But what's your sense about the big story of TV 2020? What would you say is right now you're in the lead position to be in that role of lead story of the year?
Well, I think it's a sequel of probably 2019, which is streaming. And I guess 2021 will be the threequel. Streaming to TV seems to have been dominant in terms of the stories in the industry. 2019, it's being adopted mainstreaming. This year, unfortunately, we had the pandemic, and it drove great use of the streaming options for people, with people being stuck at home. And then next year, we're seeing all these new competitors. Netflix will be up to speed, or some new ones, like you mentioned earlier, the HBO Max with the Warner Brother movies, and Discovery Plus will launch next year. So streaming's definitely the theme for the last few years.
Mm-hmm. It also seems, David, that one of the big stories this year, and for me one of the biggest, is that despite this pandemic, we are seeing more use of smart TV sets and smart TV devices than ever, tens of billions of hours of content and apps being viewed by people all over the country, through all age groups, all demographic groups, communities of color, et cetera, et cetera. And it seems that the biggest story is that we are seeing this tidal wave of independent players. These are independent players getting national distribution of their services on, and many of them are from organizations and communities and people of color. And it just seems that this wave is just flying high. Some of them are ad-supported. The ads are coming in, it looks like. Plus you have these companies like Cinedigm, Future Today, Jukin Media that have become the new content or really service aggregators of the smart TV world, and they are just buzzing along introducing new networks.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of opportunity, not just for the, the big gorilla companies we know, the big media companies, but also, like you said, for the smaller offerings that service a particular audience. Just like, we've seen on the internet, whether it's web pages or apps or podcasts or whatever, we've seen those reach out to people with different interests and different niches. And now we're seeing the same thing with streaming video. If you go on Roku, I use Roku mostly, but you go on there and there's hundreds, if not thousands, of different streaming services that you can watch that address just about every possible interest you can think of. Some free, some are not. Some may never make any money, but some may break through. You know, you don't have to have a lot of people if you're getting them to pay a little bit each month.
Is it fair to say, David, that the barrier of a content maker for national distribution of that person or that organization or that company's product has been destroyed because of what's happened, particularly this year? I mean, it used to be that, you know, if you wanted to get a service on or a program on, you had to go through a broadcast network. You had to go through a cable network. You had to go through broadcasting, et cetera, for syndication or to be on a multicast channel. And it seems that this adoption of smart TV sets and devices in particular has led to this opportunity for all these new programmers to break the barrier of it's easy to get 30, 40 million homes by just going on Samsung smart TV sets or going on Vizio smart TV sets or going on Roku or going on all of these smart TV sets and products.
Yeah, it's definitely lowered that barrier to entry. I guess one could argue that, you know, maybe YouTube was the first one, you know, was the first opportunity to do that. But, you know, I guess, you know, having something on your television set is still a sign of prestige. So I think it's, you know, there is a little bit of a, you know, you look, you maybe you feel it a little better being offered on a TV rather than just YouTube. The barriers to entry, it's just how much it costs you to make your content. And it, you know, it's very similar to what we saw with music 20 years ago. As that has gone, you know, quite a lot of people have bypassed the large labels and having to sell things through, have records and sell those or CDs or whatever. The same thing now we're seeing with video, like in so many things similar to what we saw in music, we're now seeing coming out with video offerings.
Yeah. What's your early thoughts about the announcement yesterday that all of Warner Brothers' theatrical films, 17 of them, from In the Heights to Suicide, the Suicide Squad sequel to Dune, are going to run simultaneously for 1 month in theaters and on HBO Max?
Yeah, and that was a real bombshell, I think, when everybody read that. They say it's just temporary for the year, but I think that some form of that will probably, be kept around after next year. Even once theaters, quote unquote, go back to normal, hopefully after we all get a vaccine shot. But it's a big deal. I mean, HBO Max, right? One of the big complaints or comments about it is that it was too expensive when you compared it to, for instance, Disney Plus, where I think it's almost twice as much as Disney Plus a month. But now that looks like a bargain if you're getting a theatrical movie once a month that people really want to see. So I think they've really, you know, have the opportunity to turn that around, because I think the launch of HBO Max was a bit I think they could have done a little bit better job. There was a lot of brand issues with what's HBO Go, what's HBO Now, what's HBO Max, and people were getting very confused about what they had or how to get what they wanted, and this may help cut through that clutter a little bit and help them get that service up and running with a lot of traction.
Mm-hmm. We're going to talk more about the mega content services shortly and some of the other trends that are shaped this year and what may be shaping 2021 in a moment. We are speaking with one of our favorite people covering the world of TV as the principal of Hub Entertainment Research. His name is David Tice. He joins us live from Virginia. He's also the author of a wonderful book called The Genius Box. It's now in paperback. You can get it through Amazon.com. We're going to be offering it very shortly as one of our upcoming classic trivia question prizes. If you have a question or comment for David, ring it in, 646 646- 652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04MA. Don't forget, if you just joined us, coming up on Monday, we're going to have the executive producers of the popular Fox medical drama, The Resident, Andrew Chapman and Peter Elkoff. Their new season of that program will be happening next month on your local Fox station. That's coming up Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. David, we have been following all year long all the mega content, or some might say the era of plus services, Apple TV Plus, Disney Plus, Peacock, HBO Max, BET Plus, et cetera. Where do you think this whole group of services stand as we get ready to wrap up 2020?
Well, I think they've all launched pretty successfully. I think Disney Plus obviously did a lot better than they were planning, having met its, I think it's 4 or 5 year target in less than a year. And then HBO Max was a little slow out of the box. Peacock, I think, has done pretty well compared to what they wanted. So, you know, this year was sort of the introduction of all these services, and then 2021, I think we're going to see how these all shake out in terms of where people want to invest their $6 a month or $10 a month or $15 a month, whichever service they're going after, and how they stack these services. You know, are people going to, you know, if they have an interest in, let's say, four of them, are they going to buy all four at one time? Are they going to keep Netflix for 12 months a year and then sort of alternate other ones to sort of keep their expenditure per month down to a certain level and maybe trade out HBO Max for Peacock paid for a couple of months, catch up with that, and then trade that out for Discovery Plus and catch up with that. So, you know, how people do that is going to be interesting to see. And then, of course, we have the whole pandemic and how that's affected viewing in the mix, which, you know, kind of muddies things up, but also adds a bit of mystery to how things are going to actually end up falling out.
Mm-hmm. And what about Apple TV Plus? It seems that as the year went by, the Apple folks realized we have to, if we are going to play this game, we have to do far more original programming than we thought we were going to do. We're going to have to spend far more money in billions of dollars than we have to. And it sounds like they've had people like the former head of HBO, Richard Plyper, form his own production company. They've been able to get some exclusive deals. They got Greyhound, the Tom Hanks film, that may be up for some Oscars next year if they can qualify for it. They have a new animated film with this called Windwalker that is going to premiere in theaters first, then go on Apple TV Plus later this month. And also there's the possibility that Apple TV Plus is going to be bundled with other Apple TV services, Fitness Plus, which is going to be used with Apple Watch, as well as Apple Music and Apple News and Apple Arcade. So it sounds like one way or the other, Apple TV Plus is going to survive in some fashion.
Yeah, I think that's for sure. I think that bundling it was a great idea. That seemed to have worked out really well for Disney when they bundled Disney Plus with Hulu and with ESPN Plus. I guess one of the things with Apple TV Plus is, you know, how much are they going to see it as being sort of a loss leader for people getting, you know, people who are already customers of Apple. For instance, you know, myself, you know, I bought a new computer last summer, so I've got a year of it that way. I just bought an Apple Watch, so I've got another year of it, you know, on tap now. I guess they're in a little bit of a different situation than, the other big companies, in that they've got a hardware business and a software business to support, as well as, you know, their media business. So, and they've got certainly got a big enough treasure chest of profit. So, you know, they may be less interested in making money than they are with maybe breaking even and just improving that, their already great brand image. You know, that may be the most important contribution that Apple TV Plus has to them.
Mm-hmm. And into this whole scene, we're going to have at least two more mega content entries. We got Discovery Plus announced earlier this week. They're going to roll out of the blocks with 55,000 hours of programming, 2,500 series, including 50 newcomers, all originals. And they're saying we're going to roll out at least one new series every week from then on. And like HBO Max, like Peacock now and HBO Max soon, you'll have two lanes to play with. One is ad support, 5 minutes of ads or less an hour, as well as the ad-free at a slightly higher price, like $2 more. And then on top of that, we got Paramount Plus, the upgraded CBS All Access, which will be interesting to see what Viacom CBS is going to do in terms of making that their star property. How do you see those two faring?
Well, they've all got great content. I think the broadening of the CBS All Access to a – I'm not particularly sold on the Paramount Plus name, but, you know, the fact that they're bringing in everything – from Viacom, CBS, is a great idea. You know, Peacock, you know, they're, you know, they've got also got a great amount of content to work with. Discovery Plus, I thought the interesting thing about that was, you know, at least from what I've read, you know, in this, you know, the article since yesterday, you know, a lot of the focus seems to be on their acquired, you know, the recently acquired, you know, I guess not so much recent now, but, you know, HGTV and Food that they acquired when they bought Scripps rather than, you know, the Discovery's own brands and also A&E as well that they've licensed content from. You know, those seem to be the key brands that they're pushing on that. But I think all three of those are sort of the, I guess I would right now broadly categorize them as the plus pluses in that, you know, they're the less expensive ones that maybe you add for a few months to catch up with what's on. And then, you know, maybe you drop it for most of the year, but just subscribe a couple of months a year to catch up with it. But, you know, there's fans of each of those. So I'm sure there'll be people who want to subscribe all year round to some of that content.
And the Discovery Plus ads, David, are running all over the place, not just on the Discovery networks themselves, but also at local spots as well on the cable systems. I know that if they're running where you are in Virginia, but here in New York, they already are on Charter Spectrum systems. So let's get to TV 2021. What do you see sort of early on as the things to watch in terms of how TV will evolve this coming year?
Right. So, I mean, I think, you know, I mentioned earlier about how streaming is, you know, that's continuing to be a big story. I think just by the, you know, the equipment is just becoming, you know, it's making streaming easier and easier. Right. You mentioned before streaming, you know, streaming through smart TV sets. You know, I'd say it's pretty much even now with people streaming through a set versus using a Roku box or you know, an Amazon box, Fire TV to do that. But, you know, something like a third or 40% of the TV sets sold, I think this past year, had a Roku or a Fire TV operating system built right into the set. So, right, the need to have those separate boxes is going to start fading away a little bit. So I think we're going to see, you know, some of those capabilities sort of migrate from being a separate box back into the TV set itself. And then, you know, also I think in terms of fewer boxes, like Xbox is talking about a lot of the Xbox games and features might be available through an app right on your smart TV set. So it would do everything in the cloud through an app on your set rather than having to buy a new video game console every 6 or 7 years. So I think in terms of equipment going forward, I think we're going to see more and more being built into the set itself rather than people having to, you know, constantly buy a separate box and figuring out how to connect it and making sure it works and having another remote control sitting around waiting to be used. I think the other thing, too, maybe from the measurement side, for companies that are advertising or trying to sell through addressable ads on smart TVs, is how are they going to get advertising agencies and marketers to, get the sort of quote unquote their fair share of advertising dollars? Because I'm sure right now that it's lagging probably well behind, the share of media use that connected TVs have overall. And this is a similar thing that we saw 15, 20 years ago with advertising on the internet, on websites. It was, maybe 5% of the ad sales were internet related, whereas maybe 15% of media use was internet related. And so they were constantly trying to get that message across to the internet companies that, hey, your ad expenditure share should be matching what the media share is. And, they've done that with internet overall. I think that's going to be maybe the challenge now for people selling advertising on connected TVs is, trying to up that share of the advertising budget so it gets at least closer if it doesn't match what the actual media, the share of media uses for connected TV sets.
And we're now starting to see Samsung and Vizio, in fact, sell ads directly to what they're offering. In fact, Vizio announced that they're doing this special holiday programming collection that they're doing exclusive
right.
to the sets. Before we get to our takeaway of the week feature, which I want to get you involved in very quickly, where do you see interactivity going? For example, we are seeing more and more of these sets and devices have artificial intelligence, so that Google Assistant, Siri, Alexa is on the set. 5G is coming in. Augmented reality is coming in. You got Facebook with video, Portal TV with video chat. Are we going to see a breakout of interactivity? And along with that, by this time next year, are we going to start seeing reports about how people are using smart TV sets like Black Friday and Cyber Monday online to order products and services?
I'm a bear on that type of stuff. I've just seen it talked about too many times, and it's never really come to fruition. I think just the interface is difficult to work with on a TV set. So actually using a connected set and ordering through that, I don't see that being real common. Now, maybe people would want to cast their tablet or smartphone screen up on a TV set and then work on their tablet or smartphone because it's just easier to type and it's easier to maneuver things. But interactivity is still pretty, I watch a fair amount of connected TV. And, the only people I see really doing something interesting with it right now, at least among what I watch, is Amazon with their, their X-ray, button. You can push your remote and it'll show you who the actors are in a specific scene, mm-hmm. and you can select who those actors are and get information on them. Or it'll say what music's being played and who did that. Now, of course, Amazon would be greatly positioned to try and sell you something. So I think if that type of thing is going to happen, I would look for it happening first through something like Amazon Prime. But I've just seen it too many times being talked about and not really come to fruition to say it's going to be a significant thing in the next, at least in the next year or two.
And let's not forget that Amazon has Food Network Kitchen that they're working with Discovery that is now in its second year, and mm-hmm. they may be involved in the proposed home. There may be a home and garden type service similar to Food Network Kitchen that either may be done through Magnolia Network, Chip and Go, a games thing, or something else. Very quickly, we have our takeaway of the week. We started this a few months ago which is like a takeaway, a development that happens this week that will impact TV in the future. What would you say is your takeaway of the week in like 30 seconds?
I hate to repeat, but I think it's the HBO Max news. They've sort of raised the bar on not only what's being offered on these streaming services, but also could have a really big effect on the theatrical business and how that all plays out once the pandemic is cleared is going to be very interesting to see.
Mm-hmm. Agree with you. My pick for takeaway of the week is actually a set of stories, and it's a trend, Giant Leap in Diversity. It's everything from what we said at the news note, the opening news note about Byron Allen launching the Griot.tv on Martin Luther King's birthday next year, Freeform President Tara Waldron announcing a diversity project, the announcement MTV is going to spend $250 million on new production companies from women and people of color in unscripted and scripted television, as well as the Nielsen study that came out yesterday about inclusion in media, which I think is going to be a big mover and shaker in terms of trying to encourage more production of series and services that reach out to various communities of color. I think that is the big takeaway for me this week is Giant Leap in Diversity, and more developments, by the way, are in the offering. If you want to know more about David Tyson's work, here's where you go online at Hub Entertainment Research. It's HubResearchLLC.com. It's HubResearchLLC.com. And check out his book, The Genius Box, available in paperback now at Amazon.com. And we hope to offer, as I said, as a prize in our upcoming classic trivia question segment. David, thank you so much again for coming back. And as always, great thoughts about where TV is going. And you're welcome back any time. And a very happy holiday season to you.
Thank you, Simon. Same to you.
All right. Take care. Enjoy the weekend.
Okay. You too. Bye.
David Tice from Hub Entertainment Research joining us live from Virginia. Monday on Tomorrow, we televised from Fox's medical drama hit The Resident. Executive producers Andrew Chapman and Peter Ellicott. And coming up also on Fox a week from today, James Breen, the showrunner of the new Fox Masked Singer spinoff, The Masked Dancer, that will premiere later this month, among our guests. So be with us Monday and Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow We Televise. Came in late on today's program. Want to catch up an episode you missed? Go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Check out the podcast. It's available soon on iTunes, Apple TV, Spreaker Podcast, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, and other podcast sites. You can also check out, hopefully, next week on Media Village at MediaVillage.com, the Media Leadership website. Love to hear from you. What do you think about our guest today? What's your thoughts on where TV is at, where it's going in 2021? Email me, SimonApple04@Yahoo.com. Find me on Facebook. Follow me on Twitter. Love to hear what you have to say, and we do respond because what you say matters. The views expressed here are those of the participants, not those of Blog Talk Radio and other distributors of this program. Our production associate is Mandolin. Andy Toews, Blog Talk Radio's general manager, Jay Sonberry's head of content, and the co-founders of this enterprise, Alan Levy and Bob Cherish. Tomorrow We Televised was brought to you today by Audible.com and Amazon Division. Remember, Audible transformed the way you hear the world. For a free audiobook or two, 1 month trial, and much more, audibletrial.com/televised. For Tomorrow We Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Thank you to all of our guests today. Be with us again on Monday. You know where, Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, Amazon Music, and the iRadio Podcast Network, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. Have a fantastic weekend, whatever you're up to now and Monday. Please make it safe and make it great, and let's lift this pandemic now more than ever. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.